Hello and welcome to the Mixed Media Podcast for Wednesday, December 16th. I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News. I'm joined in the studio, as always, by Christopher Wynn, the deputy editor for FD, the style magazine of the Dallas Morning News. Hello, Christopher.
Hello, Chris Wagner.
Also joining us, as always, is Lauren Smart, the arts and culture editor for the Dallas Observer. Hello, Lauren.
Hello.
So our last episode of 2015.
So we're
good times. We're going to look back at the year in culture, discuss some of our favorite books and movies and TV shows and art and podcasts and all that fun stuff. We're going to dive deep into the year's best music with special guest Hunter Hawk. Hello, Hunter.
Hi.
Hawk. Hunter is the pop music critic of the Dallas Morning News. And once we're done with all the best of stuff, we'll talk about our general ambivalence toward the idea of year and best of stuff, which I'm feeling very strongly right now because I just did my top 10 movies. So we're going to let's talk about ourselves.
Yeah.
First, because it's really all about us.
So it's been this has been our first year of mixed media, and I'm saying a year, but we actually started in late July. So it's been more like 5 or 6 months.
When did I meet you guys for the first time? Is that like February, March?
5 years ago.
Yeah, this one feels like a lifetime ago. I don't know. I can't believe we planned very far in advance. It seems like it couldn't have been too much earlier than that. But it's been great. It was basically just an idea to have a round table and talk about, you know, books and movies and culture and what have you. And you know, Chris and I kind of threw it together, and amazingly, they went for it. And
they even let me in the room.
Yeah,
suckers.
Smart in the room.
What were they thinking?
Yeah. And it's been fun. What's kind of interesting about the show is just the range of guests and topics that we've had. And, you know, Merritt Tierce, the amazing North Texas novelist, was our first guest on our first show, our first official show. We've had Sarah Heppala, The Bachelor, Chris Harrison's The Bachelor.
That's right.
With Dallas Morning News editor Mike Wilson.
Yes.
Big fan of
That was the, like,
the
right
Bachelor.
When he got here.
Right after he started. And Mike Wilson, the new editor, just asked that great question about, you know, can our average people capable of falling in love? It's certainly not good TV, but so it's been great. We had Mary Carr, the memoirist and poet, who was amazing. I got nervous when we had Mary Carr on.
She's so nice.
I will be speaking with Mary again very soon.
Oh, really?
She's coming to Arts and Letters Live in January.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, not to change the subject.
It is. I was impressed when I saw that list of names. So we've had some good names on. It's been a great year, and we've got plenty in store for next year. We're going to keep growing and getting better, but it's been a lot of fun.
Indeed. Good times.
Especially for Chris Wagner.
I mean it. No, I've enjoyed it. I'm just like feeling my year-end fatigue in a very pronounced way these last couple of days.
Yeah, it's a tough time to be a culture critic for you guys in particular, because I know the lists are flying back and forth and all of that, and we'll talk about that more later.
I'm just going to start walking up to people randomly on the street and asking, how was Star Wars?
Is that payback?
I purposely have not asked you that.
I appreciate that. Hunter,
that was the first question.
My girlfriend actually didn't ask. She pointed out last night, she said, I want you to notice that I didn't ask you about Star Wars. I'm like, I did, and thank you.
I sort of feel the pain, like after a Taylor Swift, a concert or something. That's how everybody is. So,
how was Taylor Swift?
Oh, shut up. Very Swifty.
Bad blood.
Let's get this started. So let's do our year-end arts and culture rankings and lists and preferences and arbitrary selections and close our eyes and point at something on the screen and say this was better than these other 9 things. I did my top 10 in alphabetical order this year for the first time, actually for the first time ever.
Props. Yeah.
Felt really good because there's no like one towering great movie this year.
Right.
And also I just find the idea of saying this movie, which has nothing to do at all with that movie, is somehow quote unquote better.
Mm-hmm.
Like the line separating the second best movie of the year from the 8th best movie of the year is kind of ridiculously blurry.
And were you sort of waiting on Star Wars to come out?
No, I wasn't actually. It's funny, the DFW Film Critics Association, our deadline was before Star Wars came out.
Ah.
Star Wars did end up making my honorable mention list.
Oh,
which is actually
spoiler.
really long. I'm just going to read my list, actually, right now, since I literally just wrote it. In fact, it's being edited in alphabetical order. Drum roll. Drum roll, please. And again, with these lists, I want to spotlight, well, spotlight's on there, actually.
Speaking of spotlight, yeah.
I want to spotlight some films that maybe not everybody knows about. So a lot of these are very well known. Some of them aren't quite as well known. So in alphabetical order, 71 is the first because it's a number. I mean, that goes before letters even.
That's true.
Great thriller from early in the year about a British soldier stuck behind enemy lines of the IRA. It's just complete balls out guerrilla warfare. Very taut drama. Great performances. I kind of knew from very early on that was going to be on there. Best of Enemies, which
loved
we...
that.
Yeah, mm. Hunter is a big fan of Best of Enemies, documentary about Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley's smackdown in 1968 at the political conventions, Republican and Democratic, sort of set the tone for the kind of scream at each other television punditry.
I was going to say, talk about today. Foreshadowing, yeah.
Another documentary, which we actually discussed on the show, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, very even-handed documentary about the Black Panthers who were ahead of the game on open carry and Black Lives Matters and all these other things that are happening right now. Carol, Todd Haynes's awesome forbidden love story with Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara that opens on Christmas. Also opening Christmas, and also on my list, The Hateful Eight. This is the most I have enjoyed a Tarantino movie in a while.
Good to know.
Actually.
Yeah, it's, actually.
Feels like he's kind of stretching out and having fun over a three-hour period with a really profanely funny. Of course, it's profanely funny. It's Tarantino.
And it almost didn't get made, right? Because the script
got
was
leaked
or something?
Yeah, it got leaked, and then he went, he's like, I'm not making it. And then he went back.
It's good thing he came to his senses.
Yes. I always, for some reason, I always think of Quentin Tarantino, whatever he says, whatever he pronounces, in the same tone of voice as Mark Cuban when he pronounces something.
That makes sense.
Separated at birth.
Nice.
Mad Max.
Fury
so
Road.
Good.
Fury Road.
You know, I've been surprised to see how many best of lists this film has made.
It's a great movie.
I thought it was really terrific, but I thought maybe it was going to be too, I don't know, an action film like that, you just think they typically don't do as well critically, but I know it was well received at the time, and it's still a favorite out there.
Yeah, I mean, we cineasts really love it because it's just a very purely cinematic joyride. And it's just so well edited and so well shot, and it's just got everything. I think at this point, if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination, it would be kind of an upset. What is next on my top 10 list? The Revenant, which doesn't come out here until January 8th. It's one of the best looking movies I've ever seen. I'll just leave it there. Oh, and there's a bear mauling as well.
I'm in. I'm
awesome
totally in.
Bear mauling. Spotlight, of course, the great journalism movie.
I keep calling this every journalist's favorite movie.
It is, in fact, every journalist's favorite movie. Spotlight, and is this, are we, we're actually.
Let's take a listen, actually.
Let's listen, let's listen to some Spotlight.
I do. Do you?
The Boston priests molested kids in six different parishes over the last 30 years. The church found out about it and did nothing. We haven't committed any long-term investigative resources to the case.
No, we haven't.
And that's the kind of thing your team would do.
Spotlight? Guys, listen. Everybody's going to be interested in this.
Obviously, the church will fight us very hard.
You mean Spotlight?
Spotlight.
I can't
Spotlight.
Do it.
I can't do it.
It is really funny when he's, for some reason.
Spotlight?
He sound,
that was British.
You sound almost, like Benedict Cumberbatch trying to do a Boston.
That is a really funny reading of that word by Michael Keaton there, which kind of cracks me up.
He should do a journalism movie every year.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah.
He's, him and Mark Ruffalo are just...
Oh, Ruffalo floored me.
Fantastic in this.
That was amazing.
I mean, would you consider this kind of your top pick, or are you not prepared to go
If
there?
I had a top pick... You know, I don't... Again, I've already officially said I don't have a top pick, so...
That's why I'm pushing it.
Initially, it was going to be either Spotlight or Mad Max. Those were the two that were kind of bumping back and forth before I just said, screw it, I'm not, I don't have a number one.
They're so different. How could you even...
I know.
Exactly.
That's why you... Yeah. Ooh.
So, yeah, they are about as different as we can get. Rounding out the list, Tangerine.
Incredible. Yeah.
The great saga of transgender prostitutes on the seedy streets of Los Angeles. Just a complete energy rush of a film shot on iPhones, which you would never believe.
Right.
And perhaps the most mainstream movie on my list is The Walk. about the high wire walker who took on the Twin Towers, which I wept through the last 30 minutes of both times I saw it. So I figured it must have had some kind of profound impact.
You were so passionate about that, I was going to make an effort to see it on, in like IMAX and all of that. And of course, it flew right by me.
Yeah, it's I've not seen it on the small screen yet. It may not hold up the same way.
Right.
And I'm just going to like jam through my honorable mentions.
Jam on.
Do it.
Jam on it. Jam on it. I'm sorry.
Jamming on the one.
Again, jamming on the one. Honorable mention, again, alphabetic order. I'm not even going to explain these. I'm just going to list them. 45 Years, American Ultra, Amy, Beasts of No Nation, The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Clouds of Sils Maria, Creed, Diary of a Teenage Girl, Dope, Ex Machina, Far from the Madding Crowd, Going Clear, Hitchcock Truffaut, Inside Out, Love and Mercy, Macbeth, Room, Sicario, Shaun the Sheep. Again, I mean, if you have a list with Sicario followed by Shaun the Sheep, that just speaks to the randomness of all of this. Star Wars, The Force Awakens, hey now. Steve Jobs, Straight Outta Compton, Trumbo, Truth, and Youth. I love the way that Truth and Youth are the last two alphabetical films.
A lot of good movies this year.
On my list. There were a lot of really good movies this year. I don't know if there are a lot of great movies this year, but there were a whole bunch of really good movies. It's like a parody kind of year, not with a D, but an I-T-Y, as they say about the NFL. It's all about parody now. No one is really dominant. It's kind of how I felt about the year in cinema.
I was surprised that Creed has done been so well received.
Creed was great.
I mean, talk about one you would not expect. Another Rocky, you know, wow.
Stallone, possible Oscar nomination for supporting actor. In fact, possible favorite for supporting actor.
Wow.
Who'd have thunk it? So yeah, movies, they're awesome. Those are the good ones that I saw this year. I mean, I always leave something off.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's what always, you always get it published and then you think, oh, there were five that I totally forgot.
Yeah, I tried to give it a good memory effort this year and really sit with it. And oh God, I forgot that. And oh God, I forgot this. And things that were almost like a week ago would have been on my top 10. I almost forgot to put on. My honorable mention, which says more about my frame of memory and mind right now than it does about any of the movies. So, the year in cinema. Thank you. Thank you.
So in keeping with the visual art theme, I know Lauren has talked about what a great year for art it was, what an interesting year it was.
It was interesting. Yeah, it was interesting. And I, rather than like go through a list of things, I guess, I kind of want to talk about the first thing I want to talk about is
it's kind of hard to follow that list.
Right. Is how interesting I think the turnover or the change or whatever you want to call it, the way the Dallas Contemporary has changed in a year.
Right.
They've gone from they've gone from totally bombastic shows. I mean, this is the year that their artist went kind of apeshit on me, and then they said, "Oh, we don't have anything to do with that."
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, that was I did too. Someone brought it up the other day, and I thought, "Oh, that wasn't even a year ago."
Have you heard from him lately?
Oh yeah, actually.
Really,
Laura, there's been so that big.
Well, he came back to town.
Well, can you give the 3-second synopsis for anyone who doesn't remember?
Right. So at the beginning of this year, the Dallas Contemporary had an exhibit of a French artist who's sort of an art star named Laurice Gruard, and he had this huge show, and it was this deconstructed sort of absurd version of a natural history museum, and not a single critic in town gave it a favorable review. In fact, the only favorable reviews came out of New York, which says I
don't figure.
Right.
New York City.
Yeah, right, the big city. And so for some reason he picked me to Facebook and write really, really, really nasty things. The things that you think about yourself when you're laying awake at night anxious and like,
well, it's like you say, you need to get a boyfriend or you don't get it.
Yeah,
you
know? And among other things he said, you need a boyfriend who needs to be on testosterone supplements. And it just became so, but in my head it was this like attack on me, but I published what he wrote
because it was an attack on everything
that he could have, every angle. Anyway, so I published it. It went viral for a little while.
Yeah, it blew up. I mean, it blew up the internet.
Y'all responded to it in FD. Sounds like the
John Tazar of the art world.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually,
it was kind of a similar experience. And Anyway, so the Dallas Contemporary basically said, we've nothing to do with this. Our artists can do whatever they want. But they've fully distanced themselves from him in however many months that it's been, and don't want to have anything to do with him.
So how's he doing?
Well, he came back to town. Well, he didn't come back to town. He had a Skype talk at Central Track not that long ago. UTD.
The next best thing, there's a Skype talk.
There's a UTD professor who really likes his work. And so who is a French. He's a French man who does technology works. Anyway, and he reaches out to me again via Facebook. And he says something like, oh, I hope you're doing well. I want to keep our aesthetic discussion alive. And I go,
Aesthetic discussion.
I wrote back, you probably shouldn't Facebook me anymore. Shut it down. But anyway, I mean, you wouldn't recognize what they're programming.
Because the criticism at the time was that they were, you know, trying to trump all that stuff up to get bodies through the door, to get attention, you know.
Yeah. And now the shows that, even the show in between the Unplayed Notes Museum and what Justine has brought in, which is this incredible international programming. Even the David Sally, Nate Lohman show was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I think they're headed in a really new, exciting direction, which is exciting for art critics and art lovers in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. What else?
What else? So the other thing that I think is really interesting that happened this year is that a ton of galleries, and by ton I mean five or six, but a lot of galleries moved west of Dragon Street, or west and north of Dragon Street, which has shifted where the design district actually sits, especially the design district that is serious minded.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of hopping down there.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. Public Trust is moved from Deep Ellum, as did Liliana Block Gallery. That Sidonia Gallery is west of Dragon Street. This weekend, Site 131, which is Joan Davido's new space, opens
up. Excited about that. With her son, right?
Yeah. She opened it with Seth. It was really, apparently it was really Seth's idea, and he was like, Mom, curate stuff. Cool, do it.
That's what you do when you have a mom like Joan Davido. Yeah,
absolutely. And Photographs Do Not Bend Gallery is moving west off of Dragon Street. So it's just been really interesting to see that shift. And it's a shift, but it's also a growth out of Dragon Street, because Dragon Street will still exist.
Best exhibit of the year.
Oh, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't
alphabetically.
So exhibits that I really liked were the Jackson Pollock at the DMA, which and Circuit 12 did a really beautiful exhibit called Jupiter Island, which was curated by a Chicago woman named Lauren Fulton, and had some. It was just all about themes of isolation, and the work was, I mean, it was really, really beautiful. And then over at the Reading Room, Lucia Simek had this really quiet show about...
Appropriate for the Reading Room.
Yeah, like was about refuge and rebirth and finding yourself in nature, and it was just really beautiful. And then, of course, we've talked about this, I think, on the podcast, was the Phyllida Barlow at the National.
Right.
I really liked.
That was stunning. That was, I remember walking into the entrance there at the Nasher, and it was almost like War of the Worlds, almost like these mechanical looking creatures coming down. I mean, it's just astonishing the pieces that she builds.
Yeah, and some of it was that, and then some of it were these like bulbous, fleshy creations that sort of made you think of humanity, but also were huge and different. Anyway, so I thought that was really, really a great show.
And yay for a woman artist at the Nasher.
Yay.
Shall we move on to Hunter Hawk?
Oh, sure.
And the year in music?
Sure. I didn't make any sort of list yet. I'm still working on mine.
Good. Congratulations. I envy you.
I have just as much trepidation about this kind of thing, and I've spoken out against year in lists in the past, but now here we are, and I'm making one.
As a consumer, I love them.
Right.
As a critic, I hate them.
Yeah. That's our special problem that we just have to kind of suck it up.
The self-hate.
It's the very first world problem that we have.
But I'm kind of the way you did with alphabetical. I'm sort of not going to say what's the best or what's the top 10, but I'm attacking it with sort of trends. For instance, like Erykah Badu, our own Erykah Badu, had sort of a little renaissance this year. She hosted the Soul Train Awards. She did her own one-woman show, and But You Can't Use My Phone is
so
her
good.
is her new mixtape, which I think...
Hunter, I don't want to use your phone.
I don't want you to use my phone.
I do. I'll use it.
But But yeah, it's that kind of came from the whole Tyrone song aesthetic. She just took it in a whole new direction. All these songs are about phones. She did them with a local producer named Zach Witness. So it's just a very vibey little album. Kind of one of the most enjoyable albums of the year, even though it's just a mixtape or whatever. But it's one of my favorites of the year.
Would pair nicely with the Hotline Bling.
Yes. Yeah, that was the cover of the Drake song, which was probably one of the number one songs of the year. The song of the year. She very smartly did her own version of that, which I thought was better.
I like it better, too.
Just because of the way it kind of chills out at the end and has her own stamp on it. This is a cover of New Edition, Mr. Telephone Man. But, like, she just knows what's right for her, I think. And that's what makes her an interesting artist to watch, no matter what she's doing. And then there were a lot of other female artists that just sort of spoke to me this year. I don't know if that's I can call that a trend.
Yay.
But it's most of what I wrote down. Of course, we have Taylor Adele.
Swift.
You know,
yeah.
Adele is back.
All right, so Adele is like your Star Wars right now.
Right.
How is the Adele?
My entire family at Thanksgiving, that's all they wanted to talk about was Adele.
If I hear somebody work hello into a headline or a tease about Adele one more time, I'm just like,
I think I did that, but in body copy, not in
it's
a headline.
It's hard not to, but.
Yeah. Anyway, I like this album. It's not one of the best of the year, but this song, Water Under the Bridge, some of the faster ones, I think, are a good direction for her. She needs to sort of break out of that woe is me, I'm so old and I'm 25 and my life is over kind of thing.
I'll be dead in 70 years.
So if she has a little bit more fun the way she does with this one, the Send My Love to Your New Lover song is good.
I'll be honest, I don't understand Adele, the appeal of Adele.
She's divisive.
Yeah, just because I don't need more ballady songs in my life. I don't know.
She does have an unworldly voice.
Yeah, that's what the only justification for her that I can come up with.
Well, she's a very sort of emotional voice, yeah.
And she's sort of like a Bruno Mars. I mean, she can sing anything and make it and sell it. She can really sell it. And there are some pretty trite songs on this album. One, which is written by Bruno Mars. Another one, which is written by Ryan Tedder, who writes all these pop divas songs for them. So she has some room
to
grow.
But then you pair it with those pipes, and then boom, you've got it.
Yeah, right. That's it.
You've got top 40 radio.
I would like to see her take more of a Badu approach, you know, kind of have a whole album that's like a one specific vibe and different. Kacey Musgraves did the same kind of thing with her record. She sort of a Western hazy kind of thing that was totally different than anything that was on the country charts, but she succeeded with that. And she's from right down the road in Golden, Texas.
Yeah.
That's right.
Is this Kacey?
Yeah. And this is High Time. It's the first sort of mood-setting song on the album, and this is what you're going to get the rest of the time. It's very relaxing.
I like this.
Great guitar sound.
Yeah. And
nice.
I think that gives you a good idea of it. On the other end of the spectrum, Slater Kinney. I know, Chris, you were there with me at the Granada. One of the best shows of the year and one of the best albums that I heard this year.
It rocked.
Yeah. There we go.
Let's hear something.
This is We Bury Our Friends, one of my favorite.
And this is their first album in about 10 years.
Right. And it's like they just picked up where they left off.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Brownstein had a big year. She put out a bio or a biography, kind of a memoir, I guess, is the word. But yeah, I think they're...
And she's in Transparent,
the
Amazon series. Yeah.
She also has a small part in Carol.
Which
made my top 10 list.
She's blowing up.
She's weirdly a friend of a friend of mine on Instagram, and she always keeps showing up in sort of these casual photos, and I'm always like, oh, there's Carrie. Yeah.
You can't see my enormous eyes right now, but I'm going to glom onto you and try to hope that something happens.
Let's get her
up. Just so strange.
She's one of those people you're like, I could be best friends with her.
Totally. She's so cool. And and I've seen the picture. She is. She's just regular gal cool. But
so
I'm
get her
like,
on.
Oh.
Get her on the show, man.
I will. I'll send a note out. 2016, Carrie, come talk with us.
Other ladies I really appreciated this year. let's see, Alessia Cara. She's a young singer. She had a song called Here that was very much from an introvert's point of view.
Oh, well, I'll give it up for the introverts right here. Yeah.
She'll be in town in February, but she's kind of blowing up right now.
Will Courtney Barnett figure
Courtney
into
Barnett
your list?
Is definitely.
That was one of the best shows I saw.
And she just got
year.
Some Grammy nominations, which was a nice surprise.
Righteous.
Yeah. Tori Kelly, she's a young singer who's kind of breaking out right now. Great voice. Leanne LaHavis, she's a soul, sort of a Dusty Springfield kind of approach. And, you know, we had all kinds of people come through town. Taylor Swift was probably the biggest show of the year.
I mean,
one of the most impressive, I
don't know,
say.
I like 1989. I like that album. Yeah. I think it's fun.
And Ryan Adams liked it too.
Okay, I don't like it. That I didn't like.
But I mean, back to like the recorded music thing. The Weeknd, I think he is sort of the defining artist of this year because you look at Drake, you look at Future.
Is his song Stitches?
No, that's Shawn Mendes.
That's Shawn. What is his totally song? What is the Weeknd's big song?
The Weeknd is "Can't Feel My Face."
Oh, they're like the same song.
This one is called "Loser."
don't try to cover for your error, Lauren Smart.
Can't feel my face.
Yeah, but he's very like his whole sort of chill R&B hip hop kind of thing is taking over the radio right now. Everybody wants to sound like that, including like Nick Jonas, Justin Bieber. I mean, everybody's trying to get that little slice of The Weeknd's magic.
What about Justin Bieber's album? That was a good album.
I thought it was a good album. Yeah.
That single was fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't give it a lot of time.
What was the single called again?
What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, what was
that
the
one
single
time
called?
Yeah.
We can go on all day like this.
I loved that album.
Yeah.
But I've always liked Justin. I mean, honestly, I've always liked Justin Bieber. I don't really know why.
You can't use my phone. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got here. Kendrick Lamar had an amazing year and an amazing show at the Southside.
Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah.
I think I asked if I could be your plus one for that.
Yeah.
He said, sorry, dude.
It was like Star Wars coming at me from all angles. But it turned out to be a really like a great show. No surprise at all.
That is an immense album.
Yeah. And All Right, the song is probably defines the album in a way. It was nominated for a lot of Grammys and gets his message across really well.
And I did go see, was your plus one for D'Angelo.
You were.
And that's a great album.
That was probably in the top five shows I saw this year.
Yeah, I wish I liked the sound at Bomb Factory a little better.
That's true.
But yeah, that was a fantastic show.
He just really brought it. And as did, you know, Garth Brooks brought it, of course.
Seven nights.
Yeah,
exactly. And brought it and kept bringing it and kept bringing it.
Another one that really stuck with me was Mavis Staples at the Kessler. There was a documentary about her this year, too, that is a must-see, I think. But she's just she's a legend, but she still performs like a young'un. So I think if you have a chance to see her, you should. She's going to be back at the Kessler next year.
Did you see the Nina Simone documentary?
Yes.
Is it good?
Yeah. I like Nina, and she's always on my playlist, no matter what.
It's called What Happened, Miss Simone.
Mm-hmm. Lauryn Hill even recorded some covers of her songs for the soundtrack to that, which were like a return of the great Lauryn Hill that we used to hear in the 90s, you know.
Will she be back, that great Lauryn Hill?
She is coming back.
I know she's coming.
Yeah.
To Dallas, literally. But
I don't know. It's really hard to say. I haven't been to one of her later shows where people wait for 4 hours and then don't ever know what they're going to get. Sometimes she's brilliant. Sometimes she's not.
Sometimes she shows up.
Yeah.
Sometimes she doesn't.
She's got it in her, but I mean, I don't know. I just don't know.
Let me ask you about a female artist that I'm obsessed with, and I'm outraged and hurt that you didn't mention her in your list of amazing women. That is Joanna Newsom, who has a new album out. It's been out about 6 weeks. She plays a harp. I don't know how to describe Joanna. So let's listen for a minute. This is actually the first song I ever heard her sing.
Set to the sky in a flying spree for the sport. Little while later, the Pharisees dragged a comb through the meadow.
So, her Everybody's like lighting her patchouli candles and
falling asleep.
It's hard to describe her vibe exactly. Psychedelic folk, Baroque pop. She's
I
a
like
harpist.
Baroque pop. That sounds good.
Yeah, and her this song, for example, is like 12 minutes long. But I was really captivated
Let's
by
listen
it.
To it. wait a minute. I need to hear the end.
Yeah, Tommy Engineer. So what's interesting about Joanna, she's incredibly talented, and she's developed this huge sort of cult following. What may be surprising to you is she's married to the former SNL comedian Andy Samberg.
Hey.
They live in Charlie Chaplin's old house in L.A.
Oh, Lord.
That is
like a hipster explosion right
I
there.
Know. Yeah. She had a small role in Inherent Vice, the Paul Thomas Anderson film. She was actually the narrator in that film. That's her voice that you hear. So she has a lot of layers, but she released a new album. And let's hear. This is a clip from a song I'm going to attempt to pronounce. Sapokanikan. Yeah, I think I've got that close, at least. What the song is that's an area settled by Native Americans that's now Greenwich Village in New York. And she did a song about it, and it's the first single from her new album that has come out called Divers, and it was directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. So let's hear a sample of it, and then you should go check out the video online. Hang on.
Which plays along the monument and drums upon a plastic bag. The brave
so,
men and women.
Imagine Joanna singing that in cool street clothes, walking down the street corner, shot by P.T. Anderson.
Yeah.
But so, are you familiar with her at all? Do you
not too familiar, yeah. But you know, I've heard her before, and I like what I'm hearing now. I mean, I just.
She came to Granada.
I'm not caught up on that.
I know. It's very weird and eccentric. She came to Granada Theater, and I learned that she loves Whataburger, apparently. I know.
So who doesn't?
I know.
Overrated.
Yeah.
In and out.
Whataburger sounds so good to me right now.
But that reminds me of something. A voice like that is unmistakable. Bjork had an album earlier
nice
this
segue,
year.
By the way.
I totally...
Yeah,
forgot actually. About that, but it was early in the year.
It's
but
like a
that
post-breakup
was
album, right?
Yes, very raw.
Kind of like rediscovering herself after a brutal breakup.
But yeah, I have a real appreciation for her. I don't listen to her every day, but I mean...
Right.
She would be challenging to listen to every day. But I have
she
a,
and Tori Amos.
But I appreciate her as well.
Right. Tori. Yeah. Well, I want to add that on the opposite end of Baroque pop on and more bubblegum music, the lead singer of Real Estate, a band I've talked a lot on
yes.
the podcast before, Martin Courtney, has a new album out that I actually really like. And I've got a single here, Northern Highway.
Sounds a lot like Real Estate.
It does. And what's interesting is all three members of Real Estate have put out solo albums like in the past year and a half. And they are very similar sounding, but you can kind of hear the different elements. Martin's vocals and his lyricism. And then Ducktales is the band by one of the other guitarists, mm-hmm. this guy named Matt. And then Alex Bleeker, who is just a mad licks bassist. And you begin to hear how it all comes together to make the sound that is Real Estate. And funny enough, it kind of reminds me of like Fleetwood Mac. And, you know, each person is so kind of unique and has their own thing. And then when they come together, you really hear all those elements sort of blend together.
Yeah, I'm always curious about why band members will go off and do their own thing when they're still together. I guess that makes sense. I guess maybe they get sick of each other.
Right.
I need to get away from you guys for a few minutes and do this.
Mm-hmm. And it's all the hurt feelings from when they bring up the song and everyone else
right.
is like,
it's
not really going to work for
right.
us.
Fine.
Well, I'll put it on my solo album.
Yeah.
Exactly. Take that.
Or Hunter puts it on his podcast, listening.
Oh. Yeah.
I do my own show.
Take my songs and go home.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, speaking of podcasts, I did want to talk about the year in podcasts a little bit. If you're listening to this one, you're probably a fan. And it was a big year for shows. A lot of people are calling it like sort of year one after Serial, mm-hmm. The show that, of course, kind of broke the market open. But some of the ones that I've liked a lot this year have included Mystery Show. I don't know if you've heard that or heard of it. with Starley Kine. And it's a show that looks at seemingly mundane mysteries. One example that comes up involves Britney Spears. Hunter, you'll be glad to know. It's a writer. There's an author that no one has read, and she had a novel that came out that bombed. And somebody sent her a paparazzi photo of Britney Spears coming out of a cafe with her failed novel under her arm and like a cup of coffee and an expensive handbag. And the author became obsessed. She was like, oh my God, how did Britney get my book? Did she read it? What did she think about it? Did some assistant give it to her? What happened?
Can she read?
Yeah, exactly. That becomes terrible. The banal mystery, quote unquote, that the host has to go solve. And she tracks down all these people and has all these, hits all these closed doors. But she finally confronts Britney and is able to resolve the question. Oh, so goodness. It's really quirky and kind of fun and interesting. So I like that one a lot. Death, Sex, and Money by Anna Sell is another great show, good interview program. Lore, Reply All. There's been a big trend in modern radio drama. So for anyone who's kind of a nerd like me that loves sort of old school radio dramas, they're producing new ones and they're doing really well. Welcome to Night Vale, we've talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. They just spun that into a book that was on the New York Times bestseller list a month or so ago. The Message is a new science fiction podcast that GE actually financed and put together, and now it's become a number one hit.
That sounds shady.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, interestingly, they're not. They worked with Slate's parent podcast network, Panoply, to produce it. They're sort of hands off. It's just like, here's a show from GE Podcast Theater.
Sponsored content is so weird.
Sponsored by NBC.
Yeah.
Are you guys on to the new serial yet?
Yeah.
Did it sort of bother you that it's like, oh God, they like increased their staff by tenfold, and then they're like talking about all these things that you can do online, and look at this interactive map, and da 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 da. And I'm like, oh my God, just do what you do well, please.
Right. You definitely tell they got some money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know that I think that they picked the right subject for this one.
I think it's interesting. I think it's a world I don't know anything about. I think it's intriguing.
What's it about?
Bo Bergdahl, the soldier that walked away from his post.
Captured by the Taliban.
Five prisoners for it to get him back.
See, that's a story that's being so thoroughly reported by everybody.
That's why I'm not sure
right
I
now that I'm but, w- wondering but, what
but
novel
the next episode,
they can bring
she,
to it.
She gets the Taliban on the phone for the next episode.
That tease. Sarah Kane calls the Taliban.
Yeah, I'm hooked for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to listen to it.
Hello, is this the Taliban?
Right, exactly.
And by virtue of their show, they've kind of walked into this trove of tapes that this other person
worked with
Bo Bergdahl, and
they found a director who had like 20 hours of audio interview tapes with Bo, and so they're using that as kind of the foundation to kind of bring you his voice for the first time and his part of the story, which I think is fascinating. I'm with you. I want to be kind of skeptical and just be like,
I guess I feel like what worked so well for Serial the first time is that everyone thought there was going to be an end result to the series. Mm-hmm. And now that not that life works that way, but now they've sort of shown their hand and they're investigating gray areas. Mm-hmm. I think that with the Bo Bergdahl thing, it's so reported already. I kind of already have my opinion laid out. Maybe it will change, but I feel like it would be more interesting to hear something totally new.
Yeah, it felt like they really broke something the first time around.
Yeah.
And it might be elusive to try to repeat that sensation.
Sure. Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
I'm still hooked. I'm going to still listen.
What podcast I found? I went to Austin over the weekend, and I was listening to a podcast called Imaginary Worlds.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that yet.
And it's done by a reporter who works for Studio 360. And he basically, right now he's doing a series on all these strange Star Wars. He goes down rabbit holes. But one of them, the one that hooked me, was a really long conversation about Slave Leia and why we're
in
so
bikini.
Interested in that, and how subversive that was.
Bikini Leia.
Bikini.
Old
bikini Leia. And how George Lucas was actually taking sexuality and throwing it on its head by having her change to the least human, most grotesque thing in the entire series.
They leave Jabba alone.
Well, you're going to stand up for Jabba.
God, sure. I wish I could do an impression of him, but I can't even think.
But he explores like these fairy, different versions. They're all kind of nerdy things, but they're all really interesting. So imaginary worlds.
That.
Yeah.
That sounds cool. The one I heard recently, and I thought of you, and maybe this is sexist, I don't know, but Esquire's doing a series of podcasts. They kind of revisits famous old essays, and then they bring in a modern writer, and they kind of talk about it and dissect it. And they did one on a 1970s Nora Ephron essay called A Few Words About Breast. And it was a great essay and hilarious that she wrote about kind of her late onset of puberty and sort of learning that everyone else in the world is apparently obsessed with the breast, with females, and the power play that it is and kind of what it means. And she talks about how that has stayed with her, you know, her entire life. She remained obsessed with breasts thanks to our culture. And they brought in Jesse Klein, who is a head writer for Inside Amy Schumer, who is hysterical. And they kind of dissect it and go through it. But it was a great program.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting way to bring new life to an older piece. So.
Yeah.
Have they done Frank Sinatra Has a Cold?
They should. If not, I haven't seen
this
all.
This American Life did that this
did
week.
Did they?
Yeah.
That's like one of the great
they
pieces
have
of
ever.
Magazine
they have,
journalism.
Gay Talese read it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
So speaking of another nice transition there, Mr. Gay Talese, he's written some books. I hear he's like done that sometimes.
Yeah.
But take a quick swim through the year in books.
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
So Lauren Smart, just.
These are my top two. I'm just going to do two.
Okay.
And one is from, one, luckily for a local tie, is from Deep Vellum Publishing, Sphinx by Anne Garetta. It was one of the, I'm not going to say right, Olipo books.
One of the what books?
So they, don't make me repeat it. Yeah. But anyway, so there's like this whole group of French writers that basically use a puzzle as an outline or a sort of like overhang for a book. And anyway, this one is, spoiler is that it's genderless, so you don't know what gender the person writing or narrating the book is. The whole book, you don't know. And it's this really, it's a love story, and it's a story about like heartbreak, and it's really, really good. And it's that all. If that sounds like gimmicky, it's not.
Is it French?
Yeah, it's a French translation. Yeah, it's really good.
And really, can we talk for a second, too, about just Deep Vellum? I mean, what a huge moment that is.
Yeah.
I know several of us were at the, it wasn't an opening, but a preview party of their new space in Deep Vellum last week after. And it was a great moment.
Yeah, I should say my sister works for Will now.
Full disclosure.
Full disclosure, my sister was his first hire. But yeah, I'm excited for them.
And what's your second book?
My second book is The Argonauts. I think I've touted it
on
the show.
Have.
The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson.
Sitting on my shelf.
Yeah, you'll get to it.
Someday.
Imagine books on your shelves piled up.
When I retire.
And maybe this is like a theme in what I've picked up to read this year, but that was also about gender identity and how you can pursue normal things from even though you have a queer life. It just was all, but that's reductive. It was, you know, all about being human. And how hard that can be sometimes.
It's also been a great year for books about race.
Yeah.
And so I've got a nonfiction and a fiction choice. My nonfiction choice is Negroland.
Oh, so good.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I'm reading it.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It's Margo Jefferson's memoir about growing up in sort of the black upper-class bourgeoisie of Chicago and sort of just the lines of class and race and gender and this constant process of navigation that kind of wore her down as she became an adult, and she got very depressed about who she was and about her, you know, kind of groping for identity. And she writes about all this very, very powerfully. So I highly recommend that book. It's actually not very long either. It's maybe a little over 200 pages.
Yeah. I mean, I just started it, but it seems like it's an easy read.
And then The Sellout is a fantastic, just a scathing, scalding read about a young man in Los Angeles, a young black man who decides to reinstitute slavery with using his good friend and neighbor, who is a former cast member on The Little Rascals. It's just bare hand, gloves off, racial satire, and I'm, you know, reading it. Sometimes I used to watch, like, I'd watch Chappelle's show sometimes, and like, how are they getting this on television? I'm reading this. Yeah. I'm like, is he really writing this? This is nuts, and it's brilliant. And
The Sellout.
Paul Beatty.
Okay.
Who had a great novel called White Boy Shuffle.
Okay.
Came out about 10 years ago.
Awesome. Christopher, nice. Wynn, do you have anything to add to the books?
I'm finally just now picking up my Jonathan Franzen Purity, which I know you talked about.
I enjoyed that a lot, yeah. That's a fun read.
I just started The Corrections.
Oh, you're working backwards.
Yeah. I'm reading Freedom right now.
It's a Franzen trio. We need to have a regroup on Franzen.
I keep calling him Netflix for books because they're very drama laden. They're fun to read. They're literary, but they're easy to read, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mess with The Corrections when it came out because it sounded a little too close to home for me.
That's the roughest of the ones I've read.
Yeah, and I was warned, you might want to wait a while before you read this one.
But it's intense.
There's the joke on 30 Rock, though. Like, no one's ever finished The Corrections. Everyone says they finished The Corrections, but no one has.
When did the Oprah, was it The Corrections when the Oprah got behind that kind of started the whole,
He said no.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be on Oprah.
It's best to just read his stuff and not listen to what he says in real life.
Right.
That can ruin it for you. Yeah.
That's true of a lot of authors, yeah.
Hunter, anything from you?
Oh, man. I've just read some music biopics this year. I think the Willie Nelson book was pretty good.
David Ritz.
Yeah.
Dallas's own David Ritz.
It's a Long Story is what it's called. I started the Carrie Brownstein book. I can't remember, of course, what the title of it is because my Kindle ruined my life in that way. Mm-hmm. I just go to the page and start reading.
That's why I don't have one.
But she's got a nice style.
I've run into that, too. That's interesting you say that.
Yeah. As does Chrissy Hynde, which was very controversial for some of the comments she made about sexual assault. That happened to her, but otherwise her style in writing is very compelling, just the way her music is. So anyone like that who's interesting, I always jump on their book when it comes out.
Cool. Well, this whole show has been a tout, so
a lot of
we don't really need to do more touts this week, do we?
If you don't have something to read, listen to, watch, download at the end of this, then
you got plenty.
Then don't blame us, damn it.
Except you're going to love these year-end lists.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Have you guys seen Star Wars?
Saturday, baby.
Do you have tickets?
Yes.
Awesome. Good times. It's pretty good.
Cool.
It's okay. You seen Star Wars? I'm sorry. You'll find links to some of the things we've talked about today on our show page at guidelive.com/podcasts. Drop us an email at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com or send us a tweet at Mixed Media Pod. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes and leave us a review. Just search for our name. Mixed Media is engineered today by the great Tommy Noel, sitting in for Brian Ellidge, and produced by Christopher Wynn and Chris Wagner. We'll be back in 2016 with a new episode that will air Thursday, January 14th. Man, we're on vacation for like a long time.
Yeah, it feels like it.
We may come back just completely different people with like different tastes and everything. That would be weird.
Maybe some Botox.
Until then, for Christopher Wynn and Lauren Smart and Hunter Hauk and Tommy Noel, I'm Chris Wagner. We thank you for joining us.